my God. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another fine episode of Hot Dogs and Caviar. Evidently, Tarver King has decided to join us, so it's me, Nate, and Tarver, which means we are going to do the thing we kept on promising to do. We're going to do the wing episode.
Wings!
Finally. Wings.
Finally. Wings. Fuck yeah.
All right, so... I'll edit a lot of that out. So the way the boner game works is that one person says boner, just in a normal tone of voice. And the rule, the social contract, was that once the word boner had been uttered, the next person to speak had to say something dirtier and louder.
Sheree played this game. I remember her screaming penis at the
dirtier
top.
Dirtier and louder.
And it's interesting, the war of escalation that happens when every person has to say something dirtier and louder than the person before them. We would do this in the kitchen, but in the kitchen, there's really no vertical limit. Like, especially if the restaurant's not open.
It's more fun in public, though.
No one cares. It's more fun at the bar, where, like, people will end up looking at you, and, like, it takes creativity. Like, you run out of bad words pretty fast, and then you have to start getting creative. And that's where things that I have heard, okay, come on, guys, let's do a round table. Things we've heard during the boner game that were especially excellent.
Womb Raider.
Womb Raider was good.
Custard Chucker.
Purple-headed Custard Chucker was pretty solid. That actually calls to mind the time we were playing Hangman in the kitchen at Woodlands, and the answer was Purple-headed Custard Chucker, and Nate got it after one letter. I was like, oh, God damn it. Salmon.
I was pretty proud of myself.
Oh, well, I think we were all kind of proud of you. Salmon scented semen sucker was a good one.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
This was like sausage 30 years wallet. Ago. I can't remember all of them.
Shitter splitter, cooter rooter. Cooter rooter was funny.
Cooter rooter.
One day we were doing it in the kitchen, and it was Suri's new assistant Ashley's first day, and she's like, could you guys maybe tone it down with the shitter splitter? I'm trying to train in a new girl, and she's like 20. I think we toned it down for like 5 minutes. and then we toned it right back up.
Yeah.
But now, here it is, guys, the much-discussed wing episode.
Wings!
You guys ready to talk wings?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Are we going to get into wings? Because you guys have, like, hinted at Jordan's method.
Yeah, I want to talk about Jordan's. The whole point of this episode is to talk about Jordan's method because it's brilliant and people need to know.
All right, I want to hear this bad.
Were you there for Jordan's method?
No.
No, that was after you left. Oh, yeah. Okay, so our friend Jordan Moore. A badass chef. He's like an idiot.
Glorious red beard.
Glorious red beard. Yet strangely Korean eyebrows. It's interesting how Jordan works out. Jordan is like an idiot savant for bar food. Like, I don't mean he's an idiot, but not by any stretch. He just has this natural affinity for like dude food that is far beyond the expectations of someone going to a bar and grill. Like, if somebody with a bunch of money would just give Jordan a huge budget and be like, do what you want. I don't care what you do on Facebook. Make me excellent bar food. By the way, those of you who don't know what Jordan does on Facebook, just try not to think about it too much. Just make me great bar food. Jordan would break his back for that person. If he had that magical benefactor. Like, the thing is, I think that being in a great restaurant, being the chef in a great restaurant requires having the right people behind you. And that's what people don't understand. It's not about talent. It's about a very special combination of talent, drive, and opportunity.
Agreed.
And
such a blend. It's got to be all just right.
Opportunity is the thing you have no control over. Like, I think I'm a reasonably good technical cook, especially as a prep cook. My career never caught hold. Just because I was never in the right spot. I don't think anyone could fault my drive. I worked my ass off and then just never managed to be in the right place at the right time. And that's okay. Being the chef of a great restaurant is like being the guitarist for Guns N' Roses. Like, not everybody gets to do it. You might be a great guitarist, there's more great guitarists than there are Guns N' Roses. There's more great chefs than there are great restaurants. And if Jordan were to find someone who wanted to open up the perfect bar and grill, they would find out that their food was absolutely amazing. Their ticket times may be long, their food cost may be out of control, but the reviews would be rolling in. This is the best goddamn bar food in the universe. Would you guys agree with that statement?
I think you guys have experienced this more than I have. Don't get me wrong. Like, Jordan is amazing. Like, I've eaten a lot of things that Jordan have had, but, like, I think you guys have experienced a certain aspect of his styling that I don't quite know.
I think it's
really got to stretch his wings a little bit, too, when he was starting out, when he was opening up Miss Roses and West Ashley and getting creative and stuff like that. Well, that was nice. A little after you had left town.
Tarver, were you there? I think Jordan was – Jordan. I mean, Tarver, you gave Jordan his first real opportunity. You gave him his first sous slot. And I think maybe – it was only about a year between when that happened and when you were out of there. And I think that, like, you maybe just didn't see Jordan as what he developed into. Like
– I completely see that happening.
You're the one that you found the Pokemon, but he hadn't reached his final form. Like
his barbecue rub that he came up with was one of the last things that I remember him creating when we were there is still my number one thing that I go to.
His barbecue rub was
mine too.
The precursor for his
whole barbecue. That's the one I use all the time.
All the time. It's foolproof.
His barbecue rub was the precursor for his entire barbecue thing. Like, do you remember when he was in the barbecue contest, TK, or was that after your time?
Yeah, no. That he came up with that barbecue rub for that contest.
Do you remember the sauce?
No.
He did a mustard barbecue sauce, and he did something that's so next level brilliant. I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around where he came up with it. As a binder, maybe it was the second year he did the barbecue contest. As a binder for his mustard barbecue sauce, as a thickener, rather than like adding starch or ketchup, he thickened it by putting a bunch of, like, a bag of pretzels in the Vita Prep and then using that as roux.
Really? In a mustard barbecue?
In a mustard barbecue sauce, just to give it some body.
Brilliant.
He used powdered pretzels. That's what I'm talking about. That's the level of intellect we're talking about here. The guy's a genius. He's just a genius that hasn't found his idiom yet. Like,
dude, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea.
Jordan's brilliant. Like, when Jordan gets an idea that really resonates with him, and you can never quite tell what that idea is going to be, but when you find the episode,
God damn it! That's like one of those things. Like, when you taste something that's really good, and you can't pinpoint that one flavor that's like sending it over the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you try something, you're like, "This is so fucking good." There's something in here that is sending this through the roof, and I can't place it. I can totally.
He's got a knack for that.
Yeah. Pretzels and mustard barbecue as a binder, as a thickener, being one of those things.
Yeah, his ribs are excellent. His pulled pork is excellent. The kid is an absolute genius. Tarver, you saw something in him, and I think it's kind of a shame that your life circumstances changed and you ended up having to move away before you really saw what you had started. Because,
damn it,
he's absolutely brilliant. So anyway. Before we get into Jordan's wing method, which we've been teasing for literally weeks, I had somebody come into the bar Saturday night. He was like, "So where's the wing episode, Waitress Cobra?" And I was like, "All that is weird." You know, you say these things and you give a bar guest, you're like, "I listen to the podcast," and then you don't expect them to actually do it. It's actually totally cool. The guy, Steven, he's all right. Very interested in food and wine, very fun guy. But for a second, I was just like, "Oh my God. Waitress Cobra at work. We've crossed the streams."
Waitress Cobra. That's amazing.
It was an interesting moment. It had to happen eventually. Somebody that listens to the podcast comes sees me at work. But I was unprepared when it actually finally happened. Like, I was like, "Oh, this is a thing. This is kind of what I wanted, right? This is like, let's get some recognition for the cast." So it was good, but at the same time, it gave me the willies a little bit. Nothing against anything he said. It was great. It was great to have a connection. But I was like, "Oh, all this stuff I say, people could listen. People could listen to it." But before we get into Jordan's method, I'm going to check in with Nate because Nate is a wing scientist. Just Nate, why don't you tell me, tell both of us, tell all of us, the platonic ideal of the buffalo wing. Describe the perfect buffalo wing. Nothing fancy, nothing Chevy. Wing? Just what are buffalo wings all about? Just give us, because I know you're a wing guy. And by the way, guys, Nate's ability to eat wings, just put the whole bone in his mouth and clean it, it's kind of scary. Like,
that's awesome.
Thank you. It's
remarkable.
Yeah, so, then you got to do the wing move too when you eat it. So when you take the flats, right? And then you take the joint end in your index and middle finger and pinch that. And then you put the tip end down on the plate and then push down with some force, sliding your fingers along each side of the bone. And you kind of French it as you're pushing down and all the meat kind of bunches up on one end and then you can get it all in one bite.
Dude, you taught me that like 20 savage. Plus years ago and it's still like my go-to move. I have
insecurities about eating wings in public, but you know,
I don't. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, that's the wing move. So the platonic buffalo wing though? Okay, so there's a couple requirements. So the platonic buffalo wing, so there's a couple of things that have, there's a few requirements, if you will. You know, the waters get muddied a little bit and, you know, like it's not, you know, as dishes evolve, so do the rules. But the true buffalo wings, you got to have Frank's Red Hot sauce in your sauce. You have to serve it with blue cheese, not ranch, blue cheese. Ranch and you evil. Have to serve it with carrots and celery sticks. If they don't have carrot sticks, they're not buffalo wings, okay? And then the platonic buffalo wing, okay?
Spoken like an Italian-American.
Invented by Italian-Americans.
Was it?
Yep. Yeah.
Yep, right in Anchor Bar, right in Buffalo. I was just there a couple weeks ago. It's pretty good wings, man. But awesome. So the platonic though, you want like shatteringly like crisp skin and tender, juicy meat on the inside. And it's cooked long enough to where that collagen and cartilage starts to break down a little bit, but not quite fall off the bone. Kind of like what you're looking for with like competition barbecue ribs, you know, just to where it's hanging on the bone, but not quite falling off.
Right. You're not looking for a braised or stewed texture. You're looking for like, you've got to bite it, but when you bite it, it's ready to roll.
Yeah. Still texture, just enough give, not so you have to fight it, but enough, you know, still some texture to it. You know, you're not quite like tugging and pulling on it, but not quite fall off the bone stew quality either.
And then the old school perfect wing sauce is, of course,
it's just Frank's and buffalo and butter. Not Whirl, Jesse. Not Whirl,
no,
Jesse.
Nate, I'm not going to do that again.
Not margarine.
We already talked about Whirl. I'm with the butter. A lot of places use margarine because it's cheaper.
A lot of places use margarine and butter because it's cheaper and it emulsifies a little better. I'll give them that, but
it's fine.
Well, if you do the butter right, it emulsifies well. Like some people just say
it emulsifies.
Some people like clarified butter or like butter that they just melted like
whole butter.
You drop a pound of butter in a six pan and then just throw it at the edge of the grill and let it melt and then add that to the buffalo sauce. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that move, but it's better if you do it like a beurre blanc and you bring the Frank's Red Hot up to a simmer.
Exactly.
And try not to breathe too deeply because those fumes are no joke. And then whisk and just mount the butter in like you're making a beurre blanc. You can make a really great wing sauce that way. And it holds together better.
Room temp works really well. Cold is good, but you really got to get your hot sauce heated up to like a really high temp.
Like
and that
boiling.
As you almost just said, once that stuff vaporizes, it gets pretty intense.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So I go room temp with that and it emulsifies good. And I always use a stick blender at the house just because it's easier. I kind of like heat it up and then put it in a quart container.
Speaking
and I'll
of
just
house,
buzz it as I'm mounding in the butter.
Do you ever use xanthan gum there?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. So I put a pinch of xanthan gum in it as needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is where we're getting to where we're already talking about improvements in the sauce. And I was going to ask Nate what tweaks he made to the buffalo sauce. So let me kind of like move my move the direction of the discussion that way. So the most basic is just melted butter and Frank's Red Hot. And then if you want to add
heat, so for a mild, you want to go 50-50 equal parts by weight is your best bet if you're really concerned about the heat. But 50-50.
I think that's going to make kind of an insipid sauce. Then again, mild and insipid.
It's very mild. It's very mild. It's for, you know, kids and, you know, whatever. Medium is three to two, three parts hot sauce, two parts butter, and hot is 4 to 2.
Okay. That's an entirely new approach.
Awesome.
As you guys probably know, I may have mentioned it, my first ever cook job was at a wing place. And so buffalo wings were about the first thing I learned to make. We had mild and hot. We did it differently. Our mild, first off, wasn't all that mild. Our mild was just a gallon of Frank's Red Hot and 2 pounds of margarine. We used margarine. It was a ghetto, shitty restaurant. I learned a lot, but, you know, also picked up some bad habits.
Evil.
But the thing is, the wings were also delicious. So I challenge anybody, fight me. But like, because it wasn't really emulsified, it would get kind of splitty and like, we'd have to always stir it. But like, it was a gallon of Red Hot and 2 pounds of butter. And then for the hot, it was a gallon of Red Hot, 2 pounds of butter, and then a whole bottle of Tabasco, like one of those little guys, one of those little narrow bottles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A whole bottle of Tabasco, yeah. And then a 2 ounce ramekin of cayenne. So we would just goose it up with other like outside heat. And that was a really nice hot. And then my partner in crime at the time, my former roommate, one of my best friends, Kaylin Rodriguez, he was the guy that I kind of came up with at my very earliest stage of my career. He had something that regulars would ask for. His nickname was KY. Like he wanted to be called, like his name was Kaylin Rodriguez. So everyone called him K-Rod, but a lot of people started calling him KY because it pissed him off. So the sauce was colloquially called the KY jelly. It wasn't jelly by any stretch. That was just what it was called. And he would take handfuls of pepperoncinis and jalapenos, any and all of the pickled pepper stuff that we had around the kitchen, and mince all that, and then add the hot sauce with even more cayenne and even more Tabasco. So it was like chunky relish. And he would toss the wings in that. It started out
really good.
We had this wing eating regular, and he was like, yo, man, your hot's not hot enough. And he's like, who's back there? I'm like, Kaylin. He's like, oh, tell Kaylin to light me up. And that's what Kaylin did. And just accidentally made it. Like, he was probably 20 years old when this happened. But there was no chef there. It was just, you know, the menu and the recipe book and cooks. No manager, nothing. Just the owner did the order and the cooks did the cooking. But it was it was a really nice sort of.
Yeah, there's all kinds of derivatives, obviously. There's all kinds of additives and things like that you can put into it. But those were my basic like buffalo ratios.
It's interesting to hear and your ratio. I'm sorry. It was interesting to hear that because your ratio doesn't rely on anything other than Frank's and butter. So I think your ratio is maybe a little bit more of a pure buffalo approach.
Yeah, that's the buffalo wing.
Whereas my ratio is like the buffalo wing, but tainted with outside influences.
Oh, yeah. And there's tons of examples of that. And there's derivatives. I have a derivative of my buffalo wing sauce. Like when I would do it at the restaurant, I would do that ratio. I would do it like a medium ratio, but so I would drop in a few piquillo peppers into it.
Real quick, restate the ratio.
It would be like a medium ratio, like 3 parts hot, 2 parts butter. I'll post all the recipes on the blog, hotdogscaviarblogspot.com. I'll post them all up there if anyone wants to make the sauces. And that's honestly, that's the best way to go if you're making wings at home. Cooking wings at home is a pain in the penis. Acute penis pain. That's what I do. Like tonight, there's a huge Bills game tonight, and I got some wings from Publix. That's my move. I go to Publix. I get them from there. They got a pressure fryer. They're $15 for 20 of them. You can't beat the deal. And then I take them home, and I sauce them myself.
My God.
Have you guys ever messed with a pressure fryer? Like using like a pressure cooker or anything like that?
Pressure fryer. Yeah, that's a pressure fryers. Like, yep.
Pressure fried chicken is the gold standard.
That's
man.
The best.
Yeah. I've tried using like a pressure cooker before. It's tricky. It's really tricky.
That sounds actually dangerous.
Oh, it is.
Oh, they're very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, the thing is, like, you don't, like, you have, like, it's fat, it's oil in a pressure cooker. You know, water only goes up to a certain temp, you know, and then it evaporates away. Like, oil, it'll go up to 1,000 degrees in there before it, like, so it's kind of like timing, and you have to kind of like figure out the weight of the oil and the weight of the chicken and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But like, it's a pretty good safety window there. But it, man, I just want a pressure. I wish pressure fryers weren't so like
so expensive
and so expensive.
They're such a huge footprint too.
Yeah. I wish there was like a modern, you know, I wish engineers came up with like a more modern pressure fryer you could use at home.
We need to get a hold of Winston Industries. That's who invented them for Colonel Sanders.
I would just like to weigh in here really quickly that the hot dogs and caviar legal department recommends against anyone using a pressure cooker to fry anything ever.
Really?
No, don't use a pressure cooker. You got to use a pressure fryer. The pressure fryers have more of a reservoir on the bottom, and there's some sort of like sieve on the bottom, and then all the spent oil and the pieces like fall to the bottom even more so than in like a commercial fryer. Do not use your Instapot to fill it with oil.
You will set your house on fire and kill yourself. I wanted to make sure that we were clear on that, because we
don't do it. But I am going to say that I got it to work. I got it to work. Yes, using a pressure cooker. Don't do it at home.
Tarver is a trained professional who is also a certified genius.
No. But don't they regulate temp better also? That, you know, like you're absolutely right about the reservoirs and all that kind of stuff. But
they hold it so perfectly.
Honestly, like we should get in touch with an engineer and try and figure out a way to come up with like a home pressure fryer. Just like a pressure fryer that didn't take up like the space of like the first ever invented microwave, you know, like
there has to be a giant tilt steam kettle. It's like,
man, they work though.
I would love to have one, but where am I going to put it?
I don't think home deep fryers are ever going to be a thing because the oil disposal is so messy and annoying.
It's such a pain in the ass.
Like I think there's just from a logistical standpoint, guys, this is why restaurants exist. At the end of the day, when the dust settles, restaurants exist for three reasons. One, people can't cook. Two, people want someone to pour them a drink and talk to them like they're friends. Three, frying. That's it. That's why restaurants exist. Everything else is details.
Like, I agree. I could come up with a few more, but
those are the big three. lack of ability, need for companionship when you're a shitty person, and fried stuff. That's...
Like, we're all professionals, and we don't want to deep fry stuff at home. It's horrible.
It's such a
pain in the ass.
A pretty good home deep frying method. My home deep frying method, I actually developed it. It's pretty solid. My home deep frying method is I got a tall stock pot that goes almost up to my hood. It's like, you know, 2 feet deep. And then I put like 8 inches of oil in it, so it still has another foot and a half before it comes over, maybe even 6 inches of oil. Get it hot. I use a thermometer, you know, stick it with a probe. It involves reaching my arm into the pot, but I know what I'm doing. And plus a few more burns on my arm, like it's dropping the bucket at this point. That ship has sailed. Let it get hot, do my frying. And then when it's done, just turn it off. And then when it's cool, throw a lid on it. And then after I throw a lid on it, duct tape it. And then what you do with the oil when it's done is you drive to a restaurant that you used to work at where you know where the grease trap is, and you take your duct tape pot and you like walk over to the restaurant and you just dump the grease in the duct tape pot. And then if you still happen to be friends with the people that work there, you go in there and high five them and run the pot through their dishwasher a couple of times. And then take
is this bad? Like, I know, like, you know, landfills, blah, blah, blah. But like every time I fry stuff at home, I just save the container the oil came in, and let the oil get cold, pour the dead oil in the container, put a lid on there, and throw it in the trash.
That's what they recommend you do.
Okay, that's what I've been doing. It's not that bad.
Yeah. I mean, they don't want you pouring it down your drain.
Fuck no, that would kill that. Yeah, that sucks.
But I think
there's billboards and public service announcements around here trying to get people to stop pouring their bacon grease down their drain.
Yeah, have you seen what it does to like what happens in septic fields and stuff? We should change the subject. Let's change the subject.
Error. All right. We have 32 minutes left before Nate's stupid football game starts. Like we've talked about, Nate was talking about adding some xanthan gum and some piquillo peppers, pureed piquillo peppers to his wing sauce. And I really got to agree, the piquillo peppers give it a little bit more of a vegetal, fresh roasted pepper taste.
It gives it some depth and vegetal notes.
Almost like finishing a mustard barbecue sauce with pretzels. Like,
it doesn't take it away from like the classic flavors too much, which I'm a sucker for.
Absolutely. I love that move. But I think in the interest of time, we should go ahead and get into Jordan's method.
Let's do it.
I want to hear it.
So Jordan's method is so simple and so counterintuitive and so completely badass. And to his credit, this isn't something he came up with the restaurant. This is something he came up with at home because his dad wanted wings for like the ball game, the football game. The method is you make a brine, and he used basic brine. So when we say basic brine, we mean Henderson brine without spices and herbs. And both of these dudes knew exactly what I was saying. We've referenced basic brine and Henderson brine many times, but the ratio is a gallon of water, 2.5 cups sugar, 2 cups salt. Right, guys?
8.5% salt, 10.6% sugar. But just as a caveat, we went on to tweak it, and we ended up omitting the sugar eventually because the sugar got a little too dark.
Did you say 2.5 cups salt?
Maybe 2.25.
I thought it was 1.5 cups salt, 1 cup sugar per gallon. All right, I have to pull up the recipe because it's going to drive me crazy. I've been doing the same Henderson brine for like 1,000 years.
Maybe it was a 2 gallon.
Maybe I'm wrong. I have the worst memory ever.
No, pull it up because I want to get this right on the air. I don't want to fix this on the blog.
I hear you. So Henderson brine, 1 gallon water, 2 cups sugar, 1.5 cups salt.
2 cups sugar.
I have 2.25 cups.
What? All right, hold on a second. Now we have to go into the Henderson.
I have 2.25 cups salt, 2 cups sugar.
I'm torn as to whether to edit this out because it's annoying.
How did the telephone game screw up something that was such a pinnacle of the kitchen?
So fundamental.
2 cups and 2.5 cups salt, that one says. Oh, shit.
Oh, this is a big deal.
This is a big deal.
If Fergus was listening right now, he'd be pissed.
Nah, we're talking about it. We're comparing notes. He'd be happy.
All right, here it is. Hold on. Yeah, but we have the same brine. Like, how does this like change? All right, where is it?
Two cups sugar, 2.5 cups salt. But I always did it in grams.
I got it grammed out. Henderson's brine is 4 liter water, 600 grams salt, 400 grams sugar. I'm not talking about the spices. So like now I have to like do the conversion of that. But like, 4 liter.
I feel like Jesse's the big winner.
I think he might be. Why do I have something different though?
I don't know. I remember stuff. It's one of the things I do.
But I put it in Google Drive 1,000 years ago. It's never been changed.
It's a conspiracy.
It is.
I'm torn as to whether to leave this because on the one hand, it's just noise. It doesn't have much to do with the episode. But on the other hand, I think this is a fascinating look into chef's brains. I'm probably going
to here it is again. 1 gallon water, 2.25 cups salt, 2 cups sugar.
Okay. I feel like that's pretty close to mine.
So why is my... Oh, I am looking at the wrong recipe on my phone right now. Nope, I had it right. 1 gallon water, 2.5 cups salt, 2 cups sugar. That's it.
What? Yeah, sorry. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
So we just took a long walk to find out we're on the same page.
I am excellent. So I got like 10 brines in here. Have you ever used Nutrifos?
Yes.
Dude, that is a crazy
sodium phosphate.
Yeah, dude, it's amazing. It works.
It'll turn a pork shoulder into ham in like one day.
Yeah, but if you use it right, like whatever it's protein, like a
so just, moist.
God, it's amazing. It's like turns like the moisture content of a hot dog.
Yep.
What?
My buddy was telling me he puts it in his hot dogs and it gives it snap too. It helps to snap.
That's like where it gets used the most is hot dogs.
Yeah,
we used it. We used it. They used it at Fat Duck when I was staging there. They used it in the squab mm-hmm. breast. I've never had a better squab in my entire fucking life ever.
Definitely leaving all this in. This is too good not to leave in.
0.08%
0.08 dude, you better get out the crack scale if you're using that shit. You better be damn careful with it. It's amazeballs.
If you want to get if you want to get a scale that does tenths of a gram, just go on to Amazon.com. I googled digital scale for drugs and I got a scale that did tenths of a gram.
That's what you need. And don't leave it laying around because it will get stolen by the dishwashers. It will get stolen.
You know it works if you blow on it and it starts changing numbers and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mine is super accurate. That's tenths of a gram.
They're so cheap, though. They're like $10.
I was like, digital scale, tenths of a gram. Could get digital scale for drugs. Got me the thing I wanted in 1 second. I mean, I feel like those scales exist for basically one reason and then like a tenth of a reason. And the one reason they exist is so drug dealers can get their shit right.
And the super salts, hydrocolloids, and narcotics.
Right, exactly. And you know, right, and to be fair though, the thing is, it's a kitchen scale. Like at least 75-80% of the time I use this thing, I'm using it for cooking.
Jordan's method. I'm hanging on a thread here. What's happening? He made it for his dad.
So he made it for his dad. The method is make a basic brine. So Henderson brine without aromatics. And so I think we've agreed that that's 2.5 cups salt, 2 cups sugar, gallon of water. Now, he brined them for a half an hour. I think that was too much. I think they were too salty. You brine them for 15 minutes. You just put I think it's for a chicken wine, and a brine as strong as Henderson brine. That's punchy. Then you drain them, and you let them air dry for a little while. Just let them hang out and get kind of tacky. Then you bury them in flour. Like... absolutely bury them. And the thing is, once again, like AP flour.
Seasoned though? I mean, or just straight flour?
They're already brined, so you don't need to bury them. You don't need
Like garlic or anything like that? I mean, yeah.
Nothing.
None of that. Pure
just flour.
Just AP flour right out of the bag.
I mean, you could. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's a choice, but it's not essential to the method. So you brine them, then you drain them. You let them air dry. Once again, 15 minutes, not 30. Sorry, Jordan, I'm tweaking your method. They were a little bit much. You let them air dry to get some kind of like tacky outside. Then bury them. Like I'm talking about like 3 inches of flour in the bottom of a pan and then a layer of wings and then 3 more inches
over. Bury them for at least 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have to stay buried for a while. Overnight is fine.
Overnight, the better.
Like, and then the next day, you put them in baskets and you shake, shake, shake so there's no flour left. The only flour that's left is a thin layer that adhered to the brined sort of proteiny outside of the wing. So they're not really battered, these wings. Like they're not, it's like you rolled them in buttermilk and they rolled them in seasoned flour. The flour is barely there. So you've got wings that are plump with brine and covered with an impossibly thin layer of flour. Then you fry the shit out of them. You cook them for like 20 minutes, like way too long. Like enough time that a normal wing would be rubbery and the skin would be nice and crisp. But because of the brine, the long cook doesn't make the wing dry because the brine keeps it moist. And because of the flour, it makes it even crisper, more crisper than crisp. And also because you have flour suffused into the skin, it makes it hold the sauce better. So you know, sometimes you'll pick up a wing and there'll be like a puddle of sauce and the wing like looked like it used to have sauce on it. That doesn't happen with these. They are moist, they are crispy, and they hold the sauce really well. Jordan Moore is a goddamned genius.
That sounds really good.
So after he did that, we worked on it. Well, he and I and everybody in the kitchen kind of started tweaking some stuff too. Like we ate a lot of chicken wings for a while. We started using like AP flour, and then we folded in different starches like a blend of corn, tapioca, or potato starch. Then we started adding Wondra, and we started adding sometimes we would add rice flour, but I think we all found that the best blend, these are based on my notes now from like a long time ago, but it was 100% flour, 15% starch of choice, which would be like corn, tapioca, potato, and then 15% Wondra, or was the blend that we liked the best.
So what did that do? Like lighter or crisper?
Oh, same thing. It just got even crispier.
Yeah, that was like the starches. What was the result? Like the they added.
Even better than AP.
But the thing is, the thing that really makes the difference to me is the.
Do you ever try anything like cake or bread? Just kind of see what the different protein levels did.
We may have. I think. I want to say we use bread. We'd go for the bread most of the time, actually, for the higher protein, because we added so much Wondra, it kind of cut it and kept it a little lighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've got a wing method. That was a long time ago.
I got a wing method that's pretty good. And I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
It might it's probably like a little involved, but have you ever brined and weighed?
Wait, Tarver, are you saying that one of your recipes is a little involved?
Yeah.
Be still my beating heart, Mr. Sears and Custard steamed to order, you goddamn maniac.
Dude, those good as fuck.
Those were so good, and they weren't that hard, Jesse.
I never figured it out.
Did them all the time.
We did them. They were so good.
It was only on my station for like 4 days, and I just felt like I was going down every day. I just couldn't get it right.
The uni chawanmushi, is that what it is?
Uni chawanmushi in the urchin shell. They were so good.
I couldn't get it right. I couldn't do it. Maybe I could do it now.
You should try again, man. It's like one of the greatest, silkiest, best oceanic.
I had it when you made it. I just couldn't. Like, I just couldn't do it. It was just too hard. I'm just not that good. That was me reaching my technical limit as a line cook.
Stop, man.
No, I'm telling you right now.
We got to get you a bamboo steamer basket and custards.
That was the ledge, and I was on it. I'm telling
it's
you.
It's stuck pulling all those tines off the uni. I'll give you that. That's what stages are for.
or Earl.
I miss Earl. Do you remember when... I think it was Shree that asked him this, but like, you know, like, hey, he was like getting off early or something like that. And Shree was like, are you going home for some like Earl on girl action? And he was like, nah, it's going to be more like Earl on Earl action.
I remember that. He was so funny, man. He was a great
that kid was awesome. He's probably
great
like
kid.
A state senator now.
Yeah, he was so funny. All right. So brining and whey. So like, you know, like you can just take like shitload. We had a local dairy person and we got like tons of buttermilk, and you're just like, you just scald buttermilk until it breaks. You let it sit for a long time, and then you separate the curds and whey with like cheesecloth. And we would use the curds for like 1,000 different things. But the whey is like this, it just tastes like super tangy, ultra tangy buttermilk. But we use that for the brine, just scaled back on the salt. It's so no water at all. It was just like buttermilk, whey, a little bit of salt, no sugar, because sugar caramelizes too much. But same thing where you brine and then steam the wings. And the thought behind that was like, have you ever just steamed, like, you know when you steam chicken, like, and then
they
you
get take so the- tacky.
Super tacky, right?
Yeah.
So like, so we would bury them, kind of same fucking, I want to fucking man kiss Jordan for this. So we would completely bury them in straight potato starch with garlic powder and MSG. Ooh. And because like that snack food trick, you know, the garlic and MSG tricks your brain into thinking meat. So it's just like straight potato starch, garlic and MSG, completely bury them after they were steamed and stick them in the cooler. And then we would take them out, low fry them. I want to say like 300 or 310 for like a while until they were like super tender, and then we would drain them and let them cool, and then made a slurry out of potato starch and water. And this was through all of our thousands of attempts at banchan chicken back before they blew up.
Yes, banchan chicken.
Yeah. Dude, so like their second restaurant was up here, man. Like I remember going there back in the day. And like, there was just the whole bar was just covered in to-go orders. The whole place stunk because they pickled their own daikon, and they're always But we tried so many different methods, and the closest thing we found was making like not a batter, and just like a slurry, like if you're making a cornstarch slurry, but just like potato starch and water, and then we would dunk the wings in the potato starch slurry. Like, it would almost completely drain off, and then do it at a high fry or a high temperature fry at like 375 or 400 just until they get brown and crunchy. And like that slurry, like literally the next day, just like Bonchon, like the next day they're still super crispy, crunchy.
Whoa.
But like it created, I think we talked about creating a glass mm-hmm. on one of these. We were trying to create a glass, the hardest glass on the outside of the chicken that we could. The only downside, and it's not perfect, like I want to go back and like and kind of mess with it some more, but the wing move is impossible. Like the flats, like there's such a hard crust in a good way, but like it, when you push down, it just kind of shatters, and like it kind of like the
yeah,
the,
and you ruin all the work you just did.
Yeah, so like it, I mean, like if you put the whole wing in your mouth and like put the whole flat in your mouth, I should say, and pull the bones out, mm-hmm. it's fine. But you miss that little center section, which is annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I'd like to go back to it, but like the brining and whey with chicken is a gold mine.
So good, the lactic acid in there. I'm sure.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we started messing around with the double cook as well. Just if you're going to really dive in, like Tarver was just saying, we'd cook it at like 275 or like 300 for like 10 minutes, almost like confit them, and then let them cool. And then we'd redust them with that blend that we came up with and fry them, crisp them at like 375 for like.
I got to do it. I've never double cooked. I got to do it with a cook last night, a cook where I work. And he was talking about how he always blanched his wings. And that was the secret to making this King Crispy.
Yeah.
Steam, dude. Steam. It's drier. Steam. Like you don't lose flavor. No. Like when I say blanch chicken wings, you're making chicken stock. No.
When I say blanch, I mean blanch like fries. Like fry them low and then fry them hot.
Yeah, double fry.
I'm sorry. I mean, problem with terminology. When I say I meant a low fry. Guys, by the way, when you make French fries, it's called blanching them and then frying them. Blanching is usually cooking in water, but in terms of French fries, it means cooking in oil at a low temperature. So when I said blanch, they thought I meant boil them. What I really meant was cook them at a low temperature. So that explains the terminology snafu, just so y'all know.
Well, if I could jump in on that right there, like it can also mean both. Like when we were, so potato, super awesome French fries, cooking potatoes in that buttermilk way that I was just talking about for the first cook for French fries is fucking awesome. Like you're like buttermilk way. All right, so now we're
dude,
going to
French. Okay, so remember so, like, remember when we soaked the curly fries in something like that and they tasted like Arby's?
Yes, that's what I was just getting at. That was
awesome. Yes,
so buttermilk way, garlic, paprika, and salt, and with the curly fry when we had that little tornado that
yes that stupid that dollar tool? Store gadget.
Wait, you can't find that anywhere
you
anymore.
You guys managed to make Arby's fries.
Yes, dude, they taste better than Arby's.
Like, I love Arby's. Arby's is my least favorite fast food of all.
But they're fried. Don't even talk shit about Arby's fries. I'll kill you.
No, the fries is the only reason I haven't burned every Arby's in America to the ground.
Yes.
Like their sandwich, their signature thing is Arby's roast beef. Like RB stands for roast beef. Their roast beef is not at all the former.
And dude, it comes in a bag. It's a slurry, dude. It's not even meat. They just poach it, and then it firms up.
It's not at all the firmer and barely the latter. There's nothing.
I bet the
about
first
it.
Arby's was Hardly probably beef. Bomb. The
yeah, first I bet one. It was awesome. It was probably ribeye.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever heard of a pit beef sandwich? A Baltimore style pit beef sandwich?
God damn, yes.
That's like Nate. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, never.
It's like the Baltimore style of barbecue. You know how I'm like a barbecue guy and I like study barbecue from different regions? The Baltimore pit beef is they take like beef round and cook it in a smoker hard and hot until it's medium rare.
Nate, it's so fucking good. Sorry, go ahead, Jesse.
And then they put it on a deli slicer and slice it thin and serve it on a bun with horseradish cream.
But they put all the drippings, they like soak it in all the drippings and then put it on the bun, dude. It's so fucking
awesome.
Doesn't
that seem like it could inspire major world religions?
It sounds like it should at least launch a multinational fast food chain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never had one. I've just read about them. And it was like porn. It was like, I gotta have that.
I have one. It's fucking awesome.
It does sound awesome.
Nate, your Chicago, I've never had a Chicago beef sandwich. What was it, Jesse?
It's Italian beef.
Yeah. Italian beef. I've never had one of those. You were describing Carver, that.
You know what you should do? You should go to the blog, hot dogs and caviar at blogspot.com, and read. I wrote up how to make one. And you should.
You did? Okay, I'm definitely going to check that out.
I wrote up how to make one. And I don't know if I actually provided a recipe because I don't remember the things that I do, but like, I definitely explained how to do it and what it was all about. You should go to Hot Dogs and Caviar and look up the Italian beef and make them, and then just be like, "Yeah, Jesse, this is a great fucking sandwich because it's Chicago Italian beef, amazing." I love how every city in the world has a sandwich.
Yeah,
maybe not every
Buffalo's sandwich. Got the beef on weck, the Kimmelweck rolls. Those are freaking awesome.
Beef on weck is fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, dude. Every city, you're right, Jesse. Every city has a sandwich.
Charleston, dude, I haven't had an authentic beef on weck, but when you told me about that, I found the Kemmelweck rolls, and we kind of like made one. I'm sure it's not the same thing, but like it was fucking stellar. I really
they're nothing that special. They're just really good, man.
With no, dude, a really good sandwich is that special. New Orleans has a couple
salt and caraway on bread, like it's fucking amazing. Maine has the steaks. Maine, what do they call it in Maine? They had like some steak sandwich in Maine. It was kind of like a Philly cheesesteak thing, but with Maine, like fuck, what was it called? I wish Sheree was here; she could tell me.
I mean, I would say the Maine sandwich was a lobster roll, right?
Yeah, it is. But they have obviously they had lobster roll, but like there's a steak sandwich in Maine. If any of your listeners are from Maine, like right now, they're gonna be like, "It's called that." They're gonna be like yelling at the fucking screen right now. But
There's only like 46 listeners, and none of them are.
It's listening. Really fucking good, man. I it's basically just like your standard like steak sandwich, like chip beef, like a cheese whiz type thing, but like peppers, onions, mushrooms. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
I got one once. I wasn't feeling so good, and there's a little spot across the street, and like I walked 20 feet to get the sandwich and 20 feet back to my house, and like the paper bag was completely soaked through and fat and grease. I was like, oh, this is either going to be good or bad. It tasted so good, but because I wasn't feeling good already, it just didn't help me. It's not healthy food.
Speaking of not healthy food, I was actually at my favorite wing place the other day. By the way, my favorite wing place, D.D. Pecker's in West Ashley, Charleston, South Carolina.
Cool name.
It is just the best wing place. They have a lot of flavors of wings. Not all of them are good, but the ones that are good are great. I've dragged Nate there. Nate, back me up.
They're great. It's a great wing spot, for sure.
They have a wing sauce called hot garlic. I've never had it before.
Ooh.
Basically, all it is you know that like minced raw garlic that comes in a jar? Or I don't know if it's that or if they're just mincing raw garlic, like, you know, Christopher Ranch raw garlic in the RoboCoop. But their wings is just a handful of that and some of their hot buffalo sauce that they toss them, and it's goddamn magical.
Sounds good. That sounds good.
So good.
Have you tried the Bullard's hot sauce yet, Jesse?
I have. It's awesome. We need
Isn't
to meet up
awesome?
So that I can give you your half of that bottle.
That's like one of my new faves, dude.
But where
Bullard's
hot sauce? That's a lot for me to say to take over Frank's.
Where I was coming around to was at D.D. Pecker's, which I go there even though it's a Philly bar because Philly's fans are the worst people in the world. I know both of you can back me up. Nate, because he's a Mets fan.
I agree.
And Tarver, because he lived there. Like,
I lived there for a little while.
Philly's fans are horrible. They're horrible people. At this one bar, they make good wings.
Under the stadium, at the Eagles stadium, there's a courthouse under the stadium. They like.
Yep. There's a jail, right too.
Yeah.
Did either of you see when that Cub fan in the outfield threw a full beer in Shane Victorino's face?
No.
It was the best thing ever. Shane Victorino with the Phillies was going up to like rob a home run, and some enterprising Cub fan was like, I'll know what I'll do. I'll give him all 22 ounces of Bud Light Lime that I have right here, right in his eyes. And he did, and it was great. And he got arrested and he spent the night in jail, but that guy didn't have to buy a beer for a calendar year. He's like, hey, remember that guy threw a beer at Shane Victorino's face? That was me. And then I'd be like, I want to buy you 40 shots. Anyway, on to unhealthy sandwiches. At this same wing bar, they've got this. They have Phillies, obviously, because it's a Philly bar. But they've got something called the Schmitter. And the Schmitter is a variant of a Philly where they put Philly steak in and provolone. and crispy sauteed pepperoni and Thousand Island dressing. Whoa. And I ordered it almost as a challenge. I was like, yeah, I'm just hungover enough to order that nonsense. And they brought it out and it was amazing. I can't believe I'm even saying this. It was like finding yourself watching something on, it was like the first time you watch a Taylor Swift video and you realize it's actually kind of awesome. Like where like something that you just loathe with every fiber of your being, you're like, oh god damn it. Check that. We have only 6 minutes left before the next football game starts.
Takes a back seat to that. Yes, it is sacred time. The wife, the kids, the job, responsibilities, personal well-being.
It's Bills and Patriots. Nate, what are you gonna be drinking this evening?
I'm not sure. I'm probably gonna take it easy.
Pussy.
I'm getting old, but it's still sacred time, and they're going up against my tormentors for the last 20 years of my life.
Does anybody have any last-minute thoughts about wings?
I mean, dude, we could delve all the way down into like the sauce and everything.
There's so many variants, so many. There's sauces. So many variables. Like, how about send us your favorite? Tried, like, go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Have you ever done like Valentina, the black label Valentina is one of my favorites, like standard, not super spicy hot sauces.
Well, that's there's more than one Valentina.
Yeah.
God damn it. I didn't know that.
Black label, dude. The black label Valentina is fucking awesome.
Is this a thing?
What? I feel like I'm so surprised right now. Yes.
I hang out at the Mexican grocery store. Like,
I had no idea.
I understand why Nate wouldn't know this. He doesn't go to ethnic groceries and just lurk, but I do. Like,
dude, okay, the black label Valentina is completely different than the red, and there's a green and a yellow. Like, the black one, don't get me wrong, I have not delved into exactly what makes it different, but it has, like, more of, like, a Chipotle kind of smokiness to it.
Oh, fucking man. Awesome.
And it's not like light your ass on fire. It's not as hot as even Frank's or Tabasco or anything like that. It's up there, but it's not anything crazy.
Did you guys have the wings at Monero when it used to be downtown where they pour it in the bag and shake it up with the Valentina? Oh my god, those were good.
Those were good.
The rub was a little strong.
Monero was a little expensive for what it was, but the shaking the wings in the bag thing, that was pretty tight.
Yeah,
that was pimp.
Nate, I like that really you. Nate, I like that you took a stand against ranch. I also think ranch is evil.
Hell yeah!
Like ranch is. Well, I mean, we could do a whole episode on ranch, and maybe we should, because I loathe ranch. I loathe it. I hate it with a burning passion.
Oh, my dad is going to tell me never to talk to people ever. My dad
fucking hates ranch.
Really? My dad puts ranch on fucking everything. He marinates chicken in it, swirls it into chili.
My dad hates fucking ranch.
I wouldn't hate ranch as much if people didn't do that shit. On the other hand, blue cheese dressing I find fantastic. Do you guys have any cool hints for blue cheese?
As far as what?
Like how to make great blue cheese dressing for your wings.
Oh, dude. Start out with some awesome blue cheese. What was that? Just because you mentioned the word blue cheese, it has nothing to do with dressing at all, but it probably would make a really good dressing. Is it Point Reyes or they smoke it with hazelnut shells?
No, that wasn't Point Reyes. Point Reyes wasn't smoked. You're thinking of
You're probably right. It's not Point Reyes, but they had like a standard. Or a regular blue cheese that was, I think, one they like wrapped in chestnut leaves or something.
But they had one that
was like wrapped in
Rogue River was the chestnut leaves.
Smoked
Rogue blue River.
Cheese. Dude, I think a Rogue River blue cheese dressing with some chicken wings actually wouldn't be a bad idea. It would be stupid.
You know what Tarver used to do?
It would be stupid. Remember the ice cube? So is everything we do. Yeah, the ice cube.
the ice cube salad when you made the cheese dressing and you put the soda water in it to give it some bubbles. Dude, that was dope. That was so good. I thought it was weird. Really, I thought it was going to be really weird, but man,
that was
a splash of carbonated water in it.
It wasn't exactly blue cheese dressing. It was first off buttermilk that was cold infused with scallions and garlic. So you had scallion and garlic, cold infused buttermilk, and then you'd make that into creme fraiche and let that culture, and then just whip that and add soda water. So it was basic. It was almost more like
And then we put the crumbles on it.
My nice buttermilk dressing. But I have actually taken a derivative of that trick and used it for many years. Like for many years, I actually whipped the creme fraiche for blue cheese dressing. I would instead of buttermilk, use creme fraiche and whip it. And then fold a little bit of mayonnaise into that, and then fold some crumbled blue cheese into that, try to get an aerated blue cheese. At when I was at Burwell's for the short time that I was there, I actually put an ice.
Nate's about to hang up.
I put an ice cube.
It is 7:59.
I put an ice cube salad on the menu, and I actually used a foamer, like an ISI gun, and put blue cheese dressing in the foamer, and had like whipped aerated blue cheese on the iceberg salad. I think that sounds
good.
And the thing is, it was good because the air makes it more viscous. It makes it hold, but it doesn't add more fat. It lightens the blue cheese. It increases its impact in the moment you bite, but decreases its impact down the stretch. I think it's kind of a perfect move.
You get a little more surface area too, so you get a little more coverage with every bite.
So guys,
but it's not as overwhelming.
When we open up our wing place, hot dogs and caviar wings, we're going to, I think, go with a brined wing. The jury's out on the double fry. The dust is definitely going to involve alternative starches. And we're going to froth our blue cheese. And Nate, you know what? We'll go ahead and serve some carrots too. Give baby his bottle.
Thank you. I would highly, highly advise against that. Getting into the chicken wing game. It is out of freaking control.
Oh, that's true. The cost
and it is so hard to make money on. And like,
dude, yeah.
All
right, bananas. Well, they're like $200 a case right now. It's so, nuts.
It's just,
dude, that's crazy.
It's just going to be, have to be our punk band, the Dads.
Yeah. It's just going to have to be for special occasions, I think. But good move on the creme fraiche. I would have said that too, man.
That sounds good. Yeah.
All right. Well,
make your own creme fraiche. Buy good blue cheese.
Hell yeah.
Carrots and celery.
I think this is where we have to end because Dan has to go watch the Bills beat the living shit out of the Patriots. Let's go Bills.
Let's go Bills. Let's
go Bills.
I don't care about football at all, but I hate people from Boston. So. and to my cousins and aunt and uncle that all live in New England, I'm not talking about you. You guys are all right, but the rest of y'all can go get fucked. So anyway, let's go Bills. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much, Trevor King, for making time. I know it was kind of
thank you.
This doesn't have to be our last wing episode. I'm sure there's more wing topics that we can come up with.
Fried chicken.
Yeah,
we had to do a fried chicken episode. I'd love to do a ranch dressing episode just about how ranch is evil. But guys, Speakeasy is going to play us out of here. Thank you all so much for tuning in for Tarver Super King.
Woo!
And Nate Spinkick Whiting.
Go Bills!
This is the way. This is the mouth of the South, also known as the Waitress Cobra. Jesse Sutton, thank you so much for listening. Hot dogs and caviar at blogspot.com. All right.
Waitress Cobra.
Come on, little baby, my little darling, my little sister. Come on, baby, just keep your head up. Come on, baby, just keep your head up.